And now I'm joined once again by the biophysicist Gregory Stock, who is the author of Redesigning Humans, as well as other books. Greg Stock, do you think that what Hugh Herr has done there to compensate for the loss of his, as he says, biological legs, will be seen 50, 100 years from now as some kind of version 1.0 of what is common?
Yes, I think it's fabulous. I really I love that story, and there are others that have done not as deeply. I haven't heard that's a very his vision and understanding that he's achieved is really wonderful. You have Oscar Pistorius, who has artificial sort of bouncy lower legs that can run the 100-meter dash in 10.5 seconds. The thing is that they're relatively narrow domain applications at present. What would be really interesting with Hugh is at this stage whether if he could have his limbs back, even though he would not be as good a climber, if he would do that. I suspect he probably still would do that at this phase. But I think he really gets that understanding of how we can have technological extensions of ourselves that we really grow to love and grow to feel as a part of ourselves. You know, you don't have to go beyond the iPhone to see that.
I was thinking.
I mean, people love them.
Exactly. And people, when Steve Jobs died, talked again and again about the way in which Apple has made people love their technology. And there's no question that that's become true. And as you've suggested, they've become more an intimate part of how we behave hour to hour.
Yeah. And I see it just as the clumsy beginnings of that. It really is. It's when you think of the possibilities of where that's going to go as the technology enhances, as we understand more about ourselves, it is really mind-boggling. And those are ones that are implanted and ones that are outside of ourselves, that are close to us, that make us sort of a functional cyborg.
You compare what's going on now as the beginning stage of something comparable to a profound evolutionary inflection point from millions of years ago, when suddenly vertebrates were possible and larger life forms were possible. What's interesting, that gets to the lots of people's concern, squeamishness, problem with this whole thing, I guess, is evolution, as we have known it, is about random mutations. And what we're talking about is choice, and with it the scary, thrilling sense that human beings have control over their world in a way that they haven't previously.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. The common view of evolution is that we have this sort of random trial and error process that is operating on life in some way and that is shaping it. And that's true, but at some other level, it's really not random. There are all sorts of design mechanisms that try and increase the number of successful outcomes, because if it was truly random, then nothing would ever work. So there have to be ways of sort of directing the population of new, of novel attempts. And that evolutionary process itself, therefore, in fact, evolves. You can't build an aircraft carrier by, you know, random combinations of individual small parts. It has to be a gradual process of change building upon prior successes. There just wouldn't be enough time in the universe to do it otherwise. As we've been able to improve medicine, you know, extend survival from childhood diseases, we essentially take out a lot of the evolutionary trial and error that occurs, which affects reproductive success.
And I guess as a technological super optimist, you have faith that as we extend lives and thus increase the population beyond what it would happen, that we will also figure out a way to deal with 12, 15, 20 billion and beyond.
Well, I don't know that life, that the numbers of people will expand. I think those are pretty old projections, but why not more? I mean, people used to live until their, you know, the life expectancy 100 years ago was 40. And, you know, now it's in the high 70s. And my feeling is that if we extended that and life were 200 years long, that, you know, it might be an adjustment, but in a very short period of time, we would redefine the nature of our expectations about the trajectory of life.
As you look forward, let's say 100 years, since I and many of the listeners presumably have can imagine having grandchildren who will be alive 100 years from now. Do you have any kind of specific scenario in this realm of what will be possible 100 years hence?
Well, I have a 7-year-old daughter and one that happens to have been conceived in a petri dish. So I've been, you know, a part of advanced reproductive technologies. And I feel she is the luckiest little girl alive. And, you know, we do, for by and large, live normal human lifespan still. Cancer and heart disease, the number one killers. You get Alzheimer's, your brain goes to mush. I mean, we're sort of like a dying animal. We're stuck to our bodies, and yet our minds can soar. And so we're embarked on a journey to we know not where. And ironically, I look at it as almost an act of faith that I really believe that it's very likely to end well. If I could live longer myself, I would love it.
Greg Stock, thank you so much.
Okay, well, it's been a pleasure, and thank you for having me as a guest.
Gregory Stock is a biotech entrepreneur and the author of Redesigning Humans, Our Inevitable Genetic Future. So what do you think? If you could tweak your genome at will, what would be first on your to-do list? Increase lung capacity? Get thinner? Improve your vision or your memory? Tell us at studio360.org.